I mean, you're the soccer man.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all soccer people.
This is Roots Pod.
Well, nicely done. Look out, this could be trouble. It's Prentice. Prentice with a little flick, and we are level in two.
Oakland Roots 2, Tampa Bay Rowdies 2, and the Roots pick up their very first point in Tampa, Florida. And I think this is a great result. And it says a lot about where the Roots are, but also the way the game played out. We're going to have to talk about the injury bug a little bit because it is becoming one of the dominant themes of this season. But we'll talk about that. We'll talk about lessons learned from the first now sixth of the season. And we have a busy week coming up next week. The Roots play Saturday and then again in midweek and then have their first USL Cup game a week from Saturday against Monterey Bay. So lots to talk about. And we're honored in the virtual studio today to be joined by Q from hooligansoccer.com, the hooligan-soccer.com.
That's a good pull. Well done.
Pretty fascinating website. You guys should check it out. They cover a lot of really serious soccer leagues and also the USL Championship and a lot of really serious soccer cup competitions and also the Open Cup. So we have Q with us along with, of course, John and Peter. But Q, welcome to the pod. Thanks for joining us. If you want to give your website a better plug than that, please go ahead.
Actually, I'm not sure I can. That was about as accurate a plug as I have ever heard. We like to call it myself. I often refer to myself as your friendly neighborhood cooligan. That being a portmanteau of my first name, which is just Q, and then of course hooligan. It makes it just makes for nice discussions around the virtual coffee table. But no, hooligan-soccer.com. We've been around about a year plus. In addition to the news site, which we are very active doing, we also have a podcast network. And so we aggregate podcasts from big and small across all leagues. We've got, like, for example, a Besiktas devoted podcast. We've got a number of podcasts devoted to the women's game. And we are going to be deep inside the World Cup, both the good and the bad. Our World Cup coverage is not hagiographic in any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I could go on for hours about how FIFA is a, well, I won't do it. Trying to get a credential out of them. So never mind.
Topic of conversation around here. Good. Oh my God.
But no, Aaron, thank you for having me. You know, John and Peter, it's great to be here. I always just like to say one thing. I really do think the USL is a serious league, despite all the off-field shenanigans and the various things around, you know, players' rights and I can't remember what it is they're arguing over. It's the
standards.
The standards.
Word. Yeah.
Yes. It's a great league. And judging from the U.S. Open results from today, it is a league that is toppling down MLS clubs, two down already, maybe more to go later on. So, come by, check us out, hooligan-soccer.com. But, let's go on and talk some roots, man.
Absolutely.
Let's talk some roots.
I will say, I give the USL Championship and League One and Two, I give them some shit, but it's only because I love them. It is definitely a much more serious product than it was a couple of years ago. But I do want to start with something that is not particularly serious, or at least something we can laugh at, because Q, you are a professional referee, and I think this is the perspective we have yet to really get on the now somewhat infamous Raphael Spiegel incident, we'll call it the incident, in which he attempts to break up a breakaway by just booting a ball back onto the pitch and earns himself a red card. And that in itself was a little bit divisive among the fans, although I think our consensus here was spiritually that feels like the right outcome. But I'd love to know what it is, how you reacted to that in the moment, because I'm sure that while it's probably still a very strange thing to see, you have a lot more context for it than the rest of us do.
Yeah, and I recall, because I did some quick research, I spoke to John after that and said, this is the only time in a professional match where a goalkeeper has received a red card for this specific type of incident. I've done some additional research since, and it still holds up. There have been numerous yellow cards issued to goalkeepers for attempting to disrupt play, is what it's called in the rule book, right? So when you throw an object onto the field in the attempt to disrupt a play. However, there is a very specific byline inside the laws of the game in which an object thrown onto the field to deliberately break up a promising attack can be cause for the issuance of a direct red card. Now, was Spiegel's drop kick that type of action? No, because it wasn't accurate enough. He didn't kick the ball close enough to anybody to really disrupt play. So I have to talk you through how I saw it, because I was up high in the booth watching the free kick happen, and I saw Spiegel go up, and I said, all right, they're doing that old Spiegel shtick again. Yeah, all right. And then, of course, the opposing team keeper gets the ball, and I see Rafael run in the opposite direction. I'm thinking, no, he is not. Oh, yeah. Oh, he is. And I saw him go pick up the ball, run back on the field, and then dropkick it. And I'm thinking to myself, holy crap, I've never seen anything like that. It's a first time. And the referee, I will say, did the exact, it was perfect. Let play go. Didn't stop it. Didn't blow the whistle. Allowed the play to develop. And they came, 3 inches away from scoring a second goal on that one? Because if it wasn't for, I believe it was Tommy McCabe. If it wasn't for Tommy McCabe sprinting back to clear that ball off the line, that was going to be a goal. It was then at that point the referee went, oh man, now I got to go back and figure out what to do here. And Aaron, I agree with you. Spiritually, it was a red card. It goes against everything about the game. He just tried to break it up and it was wrong. But then the question becomes, how did they justify it under the laws? And I will also preface this. I do not know the exact reasoning that they used, because the referee reports that are given to the teams are sealed. They are not public knowledge. I did ask if I could get a review of it, and I was denied. And that's okay. I respect that. But amongst a group of very seasoned referees, I'm in a WhatsApp group with a lot of very seasoned referees throughout Northern California. And this is a crew that does all of the high school championship games. Most of them do NCAA one games. A number of them are on pro pathways. A number of them are have 20 plus years of experience. This is a good crew. I discussed this incident ad nauseum for an entire week, and nobody could come up with a solid reasoning as to why he got a direct red card. The best reason I heard was that it was actually two yellow cards. The first yellow card was for leaving the field of play without the referee's permission and then re-entering. The second was then for the drop kick in an attempt to then, to disrupt the game. The problem with that was, if that was the case, the referee should have actually formally given him a yellow card and then a second yellow card and then a red. And then
his suspension only should have been one game, right?
And that is also correct. Yeah. Then the suspension should have only been one game as opposed to, was it two or was it three?
They got two? Two. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it was a non-violent direct red card. So two is appropriate, right? That makes sense. The one thing that I can say is I don't think any individual who watched that from either on the sidelines, Root's side, or anybody else thought that the red card was inappropriate. All right. I think it was the right call. Absolutely 100%. Yeah. It was just one of those things where you had to jump through a lot of hoops in the laws in order to make sure that it got there. And I'm thinking that what they probably did was say, it was, since it was an attempt to disrupt the game and a promising attack, they went back into that dogzo, which can be a very broad term. It was an attempt at a dogzo, much like when you grab at somebody's shirt. They might get out of it and still keep on with the play, but it doesn't change the fact that they tried to deny the goal scoring opportunity. And that into itself is sufficient for a direct red.
Yeah, that was about the best we could come up with too, that it had to have been, it had to have been dog. So, but that, thank you. That was fascinating. I think I'm personally glad to know that the what has to be one of the more interesting WhatsApp groups out there was as fascinated by this play as we were.
They were tripping. They were stone cold tripping, man.
I think we all were on some level. But yeah, so it was a 2-game suspension for Rafael Spiegel. And the first game was this past weekend against Tampa Bay Rowdies. It was an opportunity for Kendall McIntosh to maybe try and reclaim the number one spot. And I don't know if that showing maybe did it for him. Tampa Bay scored 3 minutes into the game. The Roots would equalize 9 minutes later. Technically an own goal. I mean, it was actually an own goal. But it was a wicked cross. And if that Tampa Bay player hadn't booted it into the back of the net, there's a route right there to do the very same thing. So I think, like, again, spiritually, I feel like own goal is harsh on all parties involved. The Roots should get something out of that.
Wolfgang deserves an assist.
Yeah.
I mean, without a doubt.
I agree with that.
Great cross.
I love an own goal where the player could have done anything other than what they did. Like, they did the absolute worst possible thing, and he would have been better off, like, hurling himself at the ground and hoping that Jackson messes up.
Yeah.
Instead, he tried to take the goal off its moorings.
He just thumped it in. It was wonderful. Russell Cicerone would put Tampa Bay up right before halftime, and then Wolfgang would get onto the stat sheet. He got a goal in the 49th minute, and that would be all she wrote in terms of goals. I mean, for me, one of the storylines we heard on the broadcast, if you were lucky enough to listen to it, is that the Roots hadn't won in Tampa ever. And that kind of makes sense, right? We've discussed that it's difficult to play 3 time zones away in either direction, but the Roots have had some really bad performances in the Eastern time zone. Tampa Bay has been one of the best teams in the USL for most of the last 5 years that the Roots have shared the league with them. So it isn't too surprising, but this was the Roots' first result in Tampa. And you know, honestly, I think that a draw was fair. At the end of the day, the XG kind of favored Tampa, but in large part that is because the Roots got no credit for that sweet own goal when they did the work to get the ball into a dangerous position. So, I'm feeling pretty good. Tampa Bay obviously got theirs, but they're a very good team. And the Roots were able to make a lot of hay down the flanks over the course of the match. It would be great if that's what we could talk about, but we got injuries and the back line is starting to become a concern, but let's put that off for 1 second. The Roots look pretty good, John, right? I think we have to say,
yes, let's go with the good. The last couple of weeks,
we like that performance.
Let's go with the good before you set me up for the existential dread. You know, that is my,
<You got it.
laughs> that's my reputation on this blog, isn't it? But yeah, you know, the Wolfgang, what a game. I mean, going into this, I thought it was a measuring stick type of game. So when you put that in perspective, you know, Tampa Bay undefeated, you know, still undefeated. They were 4-0-0 coming into the match. Like, I think you're happy to take a point there. And if it is a measuring stick type of game, like, Tampa Bay is going to be challenging for the top 3 spot in the Eastern Conference. they're inherently going to challenge for a title. You know, Roots hung around with them toe to toe. Wolfgang with, you know, yeah, should have earned that assist there. But with that, you know, Bertrand Jacquesson, like, what a run down the right side. I mean, he really justified getting that start over Danny Trejo. I mean, that is pretty significant. You know, we saw Bertrand Jacquesson against Orange County, came in the second half, made a difference. And then a couple weeks of practice and boom, he's starting over a marquee signing like Danny Trejo. I mean, that says a lot. And with that being said, he looked like the fastest guy on the field. He presses the Tampa Bay defender into that mistake. If he's not there, you know, it's probably an easy cleanup. But because he's there, because he's forcing this defender to make a quick decision, he fires it into his own net. You know, he really pressed the action there. And then Wolfgang with what would you say his nicest goal in a professional, you know, outfit here?
That's like them. I mean, that goal's on maybe on a Roots top 10 list, which is a remarkable thing to say with the team that employed Johnny Rodriguez. But that goal, and, I mean, if we're counting his controlling the ball at midfield where he did like the Cruyff turn around the defender, that goal is magic. I didn't know Wolfgang had that in him.
Such a technical goal from him, you know. Actually, you can say both of the goals were a piece of real technical work from Wolfgang, because in the first goal, before he sends the assist, what he does is he holds off that defender. He's on his back, you know, while keeping himself on side, and then he frees himself up in behind with yards of space before he sends the cross in. You know, both goals, a direct, you know, impact of what Wolfgang does in one-on-one situations. So yeah, with that, we're gonna go into the right back spot because he's just also
take it there, John. That's right.
Because he also ties in there, you know. Now there are a rash of injuries at that right back spot. Wolfgang has experience as a right back in the USL Championship. What do you
think? That's what we're gonna see?
No.
Okay, I think that would be a waste. I do think that would be a waste. Yeah, it's unfortunate. The Roots right back spot is a little bit like Spinal Tap Strummer this season. They keep dropping like flies back there. Tyler Gibson was pressed into service in that position in this match and had to come off right before the hour mark. It didn't look great. I mean, it never does. If you have to come off, obviously you're in quite a bit of pain. But that. That's going to give Ryan Martin some interesting decisions to make. But I also, you know, the soccer gods taketh away, but they did giveth back a little bit because Florian Vallot makes his first appearance in the 80th minute here. So,
yes,
you know, that's also actually going to give Ryan Martin some choices to make because, as you mentioned, Jacquesson looked really good. It looks like someone you want to see on the pitch. Vallot is someone we know we want to see on the pitch. Wolfgang is the most prolific goal contributor on the squad at the moment. And then, of course, there's Danny Trejo, who is more proven at this level than anyone I've mentioned so far. And that's a great problem to have. I'm a big fan of having that problem. But the back line does look like it's going to cause some headaches. Peter, what would be your supposition about what we're going to see back there?
Well, in the immediate term, didn't we, Maldonado, he signed as a backup right back? John, I'm immediately.
I think everyone at this point is technically a backup right back.
Everyone is technically a backup right back.
That's a fair point.
All right backs.
People are suggesting, you know, I see people on the Discord suggesting throwing Michael Edwards over there, and we've clearly, you know, we've done that late in some games. I don't like that if we can possibly avoid it, just because I feel like he and Garcia are playing well together, and anyone listening to this podcast knows how I feel about the alternative at center back if we have to take one of those out. You know, I probably we don't have time to sign someone before these next three games, right? But I'm feeling like center back and goalkeeper are two positions that this team is looking to just buy. If there is someone that they want, I think they probably just buy them to patch a hole. Goalkeeper is less like necessary in the same way, but I think it's a place of obvious room for improvement. So I don't know what they're going to do in the back line. I wish I had a better idea. I mean, maybe play one of your guys from left back over there and try to make him invert. I don't know if that's really Martin's thing, as opposed to just like, I feel like he's putting Gibson there as a sign that what he wants to do is put a right-footed player in there who may be less speedy but can do the job defensively and in possession. So I don't know. I wish I had a better idea.
It's going to be the thing to look out for, isn't it? I feel like this is it's difficult to talk too much about what we've seen so far, because how the Roots respond to this sort of this setback is going to more or less define what the season looks like at the end of the day. At the moment, you know, they're sitting, they're 2-2-1. They have 7 goals. They've given up 6. They are like a thoroughly average playoff team in the West, but they've shown, from my perspective, they've shown some flashes of some incredible play. And Q, I want to throw it to you now, because you, your website, you specifically, you have a little, probably a little broader perspective on the USL than certainly than I do. I haven't kept up with everyone. I'm curious, you know, where you would place the Roots in the league right now, and what you see their ceiling as this season.
I think describing them as an average playoff bound team is fairly appropriate. We are still relatively early. You said, as you mentioned, you know, they've been dinged up far more than most teams should be dinged up this early in the year, either through ill luck, perhaps some overtraining, maybe some overzealous training. When you look back at where the Roots have been historically this time in the season, this is a gigantic improvement over anything that I've witnessed in the last 5 years. So that, I think, is a good sign. I think the style of play that they exhibit under Ryan Martin is quite frankly pretty. It's gritty when it needs to be. It's ugly when it needs to be. But when they do collect, when they click, it's lovely football. It's absolutely gorgeous. And so I think they have a ceiling. I think they have the potential, if they can maybe do one or two more signings, if they can keep people healthy, I do think they have the potential to host a playoff game. That, I think, is their highest ceiling of where they're going to go. Are they going to go far in the playoffs? No, but playoffs are a crapshoot at the USL anyway, right? I mean, it's a look at how many times you see an eighth-ranked team topple a number one side. Detroit beating Louisville last year was completely against the run of any logic that anybody could have thought of. The odds on that one in Vegas must have been astronomical, and some people made some good money on that. But
I would love to meet the people who go to Las Vegas and bet on USL games.
I think that would be a terrifying coterie.
Oh, yeah.
Folks. Yes.
I'd say, yeah. It's more of an anthropological experiment than anything else, but.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Love
but
to see it.
But I
do probably
think,
all Detroit.
I think they've got, I want to say, I think they've got playoff hosting in them. I think they could finish third or fourth. I don't think they're going to finish top, but I do think they have the potential to go third or fourth. They've got games in hand, and this three-game stretch, particularly the first two, because those are league games. We all know that the USL Cup. I don't even know who the sponsor is anymore. It's Jägermeister last year. I'm not sure who the sponsor is. It's Prince Tires, right?
Prince Tires. Yes. That tire brand we're all familiar with.
Yeah, so, you know, it's like, and at least they don't spell tire with a Y, so we know that they're not from England, but that's fine. you know, we know that that whole thing doesn't really matter. That's just fluff. Damn it, there goes another sponsor that's not going to give us any money. Damn it. All right, anyway. Third or fourth. That's where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
I think that's their ceiling.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I mean, I also think that, you know, this injury bug, it's something to watch. You know, that's something we mentioned before the start of the season. Like, this can turn left really fast once bodies start going down. You know, Aaron, I think we all pointed out in the preseason that right back spot was the position of concern. We were going in without Keegan Tingey. Mark Fisher was the only true backup. He was already starting. And we knew if Fisher went down, you know, there could be a snowball effect. And we are in the midst of that snowball effect. You know, we already have Tyler Gibson, the third string right back, going down. Do you shift Michael Edwards out there? He already has shown, you know, that he is getting minutes on that side, but I don't think he offers the amount of passing that you did get out of Mark Fisher, that you will get out of Keegan Tingey. A lot depends on when Tingey will be back. Last time we talked to Ryan Martin, he did kind of air caution about when he will return. He said he's still going to take some time. We know Mark Fisher is going to take more time than him. So, yeah, here we are. We have Maldonado. He's on a 25-day contract, and he only has about 12, less than that. I think he has 6 days left on that that contract.
Just enough for two games.
Yeah, oh, yeah. So here we go. What do you do with him? Does he get a second 25-day contract? Do you sign him to a longer-term deal just to shore up that area? There is some talent in Project 5-0. I'm thinking Jonathan Polio. There's probably some other guys too. Polio's got time with the U20 El Salvador national team. I think this is a league where you can kind of throw these young guys into the fire, see what they can do. But, you know, are we at the stage now where you start mixing and matching? I think we are learning, especially from that Orange County game, that Martin is wanting to build consistency and continuity in a lineup in particular. You know, he went to that back three against Orange County, hated it, went back to the back four in the second half and admitted, wow, we look so much better. So I think, you know, from here on out, he's going to want to hammer away at that formation. So what does that mean with the personnel available? You know, right back, obvious, could be a position to sign someone, but where does the priority lie with that and the goalkeeper spot? You know, you have three senior guys, you know, in Tingey, Fisher, Gibson, presumably under contract as a right back. Do you add a fourth? You know, that's a tough question. While you have, you know, two senior guys and an academy guy under contract at the goalkeeper spot. I think we've heard, you know, Spiegel is a manageable deal, but what do you do there? I think that, you know, if the priorities, if we're listing them, I think goalkeeper, who signing a starting goalkeeper, definitely takes priority over a backup right back. So it's going to be an interesting couple of months here, especially as we see, you know, these fringe MLS players kind of get cast off from their rosters. You know, Roots don't loan players in, but I think if Ryan Martin says, look, I want a starting goalkeeper, they're going to go get him. And if they have to loan a guy in, they'll definitely do that. So we'll see.
Yeah, the variable that for, you know, for us to have any more concrete answers here would be nice to nail down is how much longer is Keegan Tingey going to be out, right? Because if it isn't too many games, maybe you just white knuckle it until then. You know, I think one thing that you frequently see when you get this kind of spate of injuries is you start to move personnel around the pitch, because let's be real, the guys who are in the starting 11 and the first couple off the bench are there because the manager tends to trust them more than everyone else on the roster, right? And so I think it tends to be only natural that you start moving guys around. But I like your suggestion. You know, maybe we look to the 510 for a stopgap solution here. I'd like to see guys who are succeeding stay in the positions on the pitch where they're succeeding. And I think that might mean for a few games that the coaching staff has to accept probably less of what they want out of that right back spot, but that might ultimately be the way to go if help is on the way, if Keegan Tingey will return to the pitch in a manageable number of games, if we're gonna be without, you know, one of the Tingey or Edwards or Gibson for a while, it's a different conversation. But I think how Ryan Martin reacts will tell us, one, what he's valuing about what he sees on the pitch, and hopefully also a little bit about how much longer this situation we have to endure. Because it's really unfortunate. The Roots have played some of the best football we have seen from them while they've been in the USL this year, and what we end up talking about is one blown lead and a bunch of injuries. And it's sort of unfair to them, because it has been, as Q said, it's been beautiful soccer at times this season, and it is certainly a much more aesthetically pleasing product than the Roots have put out in past seasons. And it's just too bad that this is what we get to talk about. But that's
well, look, it's what you've talked about. I was misidentifying Cruyff turns.
Yeah, that's, I think you've actually identified several different things as a Cruyff turn on this podcast.
Eventually, I might be right.
That's right. Anytime someone changes direction with the ball, it's a Cruyff turn.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, and to that point, you know, they were playing some beautiful soccer in this Tampa Bay match. I mean, there was one moment from minutes 17 to 20. I mean, it didn't result in a shot on target, but I counted it up. They completed 50 passes in a row. I mean, or almost 50 passes in a row. I think in that span, Tampa Bay got the ball for two passes in total, and Roots were just connecting and connecting. And I was like, who is this team? I have never seen this before. You know, who are we? Look at us. So, I mean, it's a sample, I think, of more things to come with Ryan Martin. And we'll see how, you know, hopefully end of season Roots can really replicate that moment, because it was such a cool just 3 minutes of time where I'm like, oh my God, like they haven't given up the ball. Who is this team? You know, so really beautiful soccer. It's fun to watch, and you know, onwards and upwards. Let's hope it keeps coming together.
Yeah. Perhaps to the Roots' benefit, this next week, though it has many fixtures, we're not facing the Giants of the USL this coming week.
Western Conference finalist?
Well,
I mean, yeah. Hold on. Aaron, I got to say, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I was thinking the exact same thing. This is a kind three-game stretch. The timing of it sucks. Let's not beat around the bush. The timing of it, the density of it is crap, but the opposition is all beatable.
Yeah.
Even without a right back, this opposition is beatable, right? Tulsa. Yep. They're the defending Western Conference champs, but they ain't playing like it. I mean, it's just, they're not in tip top shape. They haven't quite congealed. Las Vegas is still Las Vegas. There are some mercies in this world, right? They don't change. That's great. And then, of course, Monterey. I can't even find the words for them. So,
they've been pretty woeful this season.
They have. And unlike last season, where they came out of the gates like like a thoroughbred. They were phenomenal first 6-7 games, unstoppable force. And then just, you know, that was it. It was like trying to ask a 100-yard dash, somebody who does a 100-yard dash to run, you know, the 3,000 meters. It ain't going to end well. This, you know, I know they went on a big stretch. They signed, you know, Sebastian, Lechet, just to, you know, get some boost in there. And it's not really working. They just can't score. Let us hope that they keep misplacing, that the Kitman keeps putting the scoring boots in the wrong slot. All right. And that they can't continue to score. That's all but if you're going to have a time or a stretch where you can tinker with your line, this is a 3-game stretch. It's particularly the game against Monterey Bay, because they can overcome, even drop in the first game in that cup sequence. They can afford to drop that if they have to. That's an occasion where I think you see somebody like your 510 kids, your polio. It's not polio because he's not a disease.
It's polio, isn't it?
It's polio.
Yes. I'm terrible with names.
No. That is the occasion where you bring up a young man like that and you say, right, here's your time. Show us what you got.
Yeah.
Go out there and impress us. And maybe somebody else, you know, from the youth team as well. I'm not too familiar with the 510. I don't get a chance to watch them as much, but yeah. We have had success with 510 players before. There's no reason to think that we can't do that again.
Yeah. So the nuts and bolts of the coming week and a half here, right? Two home league matches against FC Tulsa and Las Vegas Lights, both of whom sit outside the playoff picture as of the time of this recording. Lights have one of the worst defenses in the league. Tulsa, one of the worst attacks. You know, it's hopefully what the doctor ordered. And then next weekend, a week from Saturday, the first match of the Prinks Tires U.S. Open Cup. And I did a little Googling. Prinks appears to be the Timu of tires, basically. That appears to be what's going on there.
All right.
So that'll be away against Monterey Bay. And you know, you do love to compete in a cup competition, but perhaps for a team with an injured list as long as the Roots currently have, we take a mulligan here, at least on this one. Although, you know, if you want to progress in this cup, it's actually a pretty unforgiving format this year. But let's talk about these first two league games first. I mean, Florian Vallot is back. I feel like other than the right back spot, that is probably the headline for this coming week, right? That has to be the big talking point. I assume this is going to show up in Luis's three questions for the Roots, at least before the Tulsa game.
Yeah, I mean, is Vallot ready to start? I would imagine that Martin's going to run him out there when he's ready to start. Although, I mean, what, he replaces Batashe, who's been great this season. So, you know, who knows, maybe he has to earn his place back. I'm looking forward to seeing that. I mean, I think that all our questions about the right back aside, I it's hard to pick an attacking unit to start this game this coming weekend. And that's really exciting. I mean, when was the last time the Roots had that kind of options, that kind of, you know, optimism? You could be like, oh, there's six guys that we want in four positions, and I can't be disappointed by anything Martin does this weekend unless he runs the back three again.
Yeah, that's about right. So before we get to the Open Cup stuff, we'll run down the nuts and bolts there. Let's talk about what we think these next two Roots wins are going to look like. John, let me throw it to you first. How are the Roots winning these next two games? What is the shape of these games that results in 6 points for the Oakland Roots?
Well, I want to see more of that dominant possession that we saw against Tampa Bay. If they can do it against Tampa Bay, they can do it against Tulsa. They could do it against Las Vegas. I think it's a great opportunity for this attack to get it going. Peter Wilson to get it going. You know, we haven't talked about him. He's had a rough start to this season, kind of like last season. You know, he's still getting in great positions and he's still freeing up his other offensive teammates, you know, and that's the great thing about this attack is the goals can come from other places. You know, they're not relying on Peter Wilson. Peter Wilson can open up the field for Wolfgang, for Jacquesson, for Velo, for Batash, you know, and for Trejo. So I would like to see, you know, Peter Wilson get it going. You know, he does kind of look like that first half of last season, Peter Wilson, where he's really pressing for a goal. You know, that he had that great feed from De Vicente in the second half and just, you know, scuffs it 6 yards wide. It kind of reminded me, to a lesser extent, of against New Mexico. He gets another ball in behind, you know, Wolfgang with a great feed. And he just tries to, you know, be a little too pinpoint on it and go to the far post where it's like, man, just, you know, just put some power on it, put it on frame. While in contrast, this last game, I think he just overpowered it and just tried to go for, you know, put everything behind it. And it's like, man, yeah, it reminds me of that first half of last season. So with that, I think, you know, to echo Q's point, everybody's point, I mean, these are some good times for a match against Tulsa struggling. Am I giving my score? Am I giving my score now?
Yeah, go ahead.
3-0. Let's go.
3-0 and against Vegas?
3-1.
Johnny, wow. A Johnny Rodriguez consolation goal? Yes, yes, absolutely. All right. Bold start. That's a bold start.
Damn.
Q, the floor is yours. What do these wins look like? If the Oakland Rins take 6 points, what does it look like?
I think Tulsa's a scrappier affair than John. I love your optimism. It's very infectious.
I will let you know, Q. We have had a lot of score predictions on this. I have never predicted a Roots loss or tie. So take that for what you will.
Okay. Yeah, I will take it. But I think it's going to be a little tighter. I think it's a 2-1. I think it's a 2-1 win over Tulsa. I think that's that the winning goal comes late. I do think that Peter Wilson will finally get one. I feel that he's all of the stuff that he's been doing, all of the, as you so aptly mentioned, John, his overzealousness and his sort of almost too much in his own headness he's going to slough that off and he's going to find that Zen again and get one in. Once he gets one in, more will follow. And Vegas, if he gets that one, which I think he will against Tulsa, I think he's going to come back and score a brace against Las Vegas. I do think they're going to put three up against Vegas. It's a game that's just absolutely crying out for multiple goals to be put in. So yeah, whether they concede, they might concede. I could see Johnny coming back. He loves to score against the Roots. I mean, it's like, why not? I do think the three will go in, and whether it's 3-1 or 3-2, you know, Vegas will probably put some fear in the crowd, but, ultimately, that's how they're going to prevail.
All right. Peter?
Well, Tulsa do not concede that many goals. They also don't score goals, which is the good news. I have the Roots winning 2-0, which feels a little optimistic. But I believe in the Roots attack right now. We're not talking John optimistic here. But and Vegas, I am loath to pick a shutout just because Vegas have scored really quite a lot of goals. They have not been shut out yet. They have, they're averaging like 2 goals a game or something. So anyway, I have the Roots winning over Vegas 2-1. And honestly, predicting two wins in two for the Roos is maybe the most optimistic I've ever been about this team. There we go.
It's a different era. It's a different era all around. I want to give a shout out to the one unit on the team we haven't really talked about yet, which is the midfield. And we're not talking about them because they're so dependable so far this season. But McCabe and Yarahanga, potentially the best midfield duo. God, that's a bold statement from a guy who admitted earlier in this podcast he doesn't watch too much other USL soccer. But like, screw it. Maybe the best midfield duo in the league, at least in the Western Conference. You know, Louisville City looks pretty good, but whatever. And I think that is that's how we're getting through any stretch where we have questions along the back line. In terms of how these games play out, if I know anything from watching the Oakland Roots, is that they love to buck the obvious narrative. I agree. Tulsa looks scrappy. Just on paper, you know, this is not a team that's playing a lot of high scoring games. So obviously that's going to be like 4-2 or something. You know, that's just how it always goes. And Vegas has lost all of their away matches in the league, 2-3, I think 3-2, you know, depending on. So that's obviously going to be 1-0 somehow. that's just how it's going to be. But it is a. If you're going to have a midweek fixture, you know, sort of that, have that shortened layoff at a time when you are hurting in terms of injuries, you probably can't ask for a better setup than two home matches against teams in the bottom part of the conference. So fingers crossed the Roots can take advantage of that. And then a week from Saturday, as we mentioned, it's the first match of the Prinks Tires USL Cup. The structure a little bit different than last year, although this is generally how it's going down these days. There are seven groups of between five and seven teams from across the USL levels. The Oakland Roots are in Group 1 with Spokane Velocity, Athletic Club Boise, Sacramento Republic, Monterey Bay, and Las Vegas. And the way it works is that the winner of each group plus the best second place team goes through to the quarterfinals. That's it. So you got to win the group to progress. I think that if you're Oakland, you're feeling decent about that because on paper, really, it's you or Sacramento. And we do actually get to play Sacramento in the cup. That game will be home in the middle of May. So, I mean, if you're thinking about this, you're gaming it out, the most important match is probably that one. It is a home match. At the same time, we lost to Spokane Velocity last year, right? Yep, I mean,
we did.
So, but if you want to go through...
Well, we were dog shit last year. I mean, you have to remember...
That's true.
Garbage.
Again, if it's going to be a new dawn for your optimism, it might as well be a new dawn for Roots against League One opponents. Do think they probably need a result out of this Monterey Bay game if they want to go through, but it does appear to present itself as a bit of a chance to experiment and rest.
Yeah, I agree. I think I agree with what Q said earlier. It is the time to... Yeah, rest your lineup, start the kids, see what you got out there. You know, and if Roots do become like serious about the cup, it's probably because they, you know, scrap out some of these early results.
They just accidentally win against Monterey Bay in December.
No, I mean, in a way, because like, oh, you want to, you know, conserve your lineup. If you start stringing some results together, then like, oh, you know, all right, let's go for it. But, you know, Monterey is an interesting topic. They are in a lot of turmoil. Who knows how they could look come that weekend? You know, they Jordan Stewart could be one loss away from getting sacked. That's really the reality of the situation over there. Things have not been good. The fans are really upset. They've had their eye on Jordan Stewart since before the season started. They understand something's got to give really, really soon. And one loss, a league loss coming up, it could look like a different team come that weekend. So that's, you know, I think it is a match to start the kids, get Roberson some minutes at striker, maybe start some of the veterans on the back end, like Hackshaw, you know, but really an opportunity to get some of the young guys some minutes, like Emilio Martinez, Project 510 Player of the Year, Polio, get him some time, you know, a lot of these other guys. So we'll see. We'll see.
Well, let's just jump off of that in the little bit of time we have to talk about this, and let's say, who is one sort of off the board guy you are looking forward to see play in the cup? John, you just mentioned about 12 of them, so maybe you could whittle it down.
Martinez, 5-0 Player of the Year. I think that you know, the 5-0 Player of the Year is always going to be a guy to watch out for. You know, that means someone the organization has an eye on. It's someone they view as someone who can make that leap to the first team. So he's definitely the guy to watch this year. And I'll throw one more, Roberson.
Well, that was my pick. So you're gonna have to skip me.
Oh, okay, Peter, you've come up with a second one. Q, what about you? Who would you like to see? And I mean, you already mentioned, and I don't blame you, you're not a lot of familiar with 510, but there's a lot of guys on the bench who haven't seen a lot of
Is true. I mean, I would like to see, because he's been brilliant already, and it's going to seem like a cop-out, I would like to see Bobosi put in some bangers against Monterey. He has more shots than anybody else on the team, right? He's firing them. He's just not hitting, you know, in the frame. Now is the time to come through. I also think I'd like to see the fifth musketeer, as I affectionately refer to Mr. Velo. And if you've ever seen him, you know what I'm talking about. The man literally looks like he came out of the novel.
Errol Flynn.
It is eerie. I'm like, dude, seriously? Wow. And so I'd like to see him come forward and do some stuff. We haven't seen much of you know, Ollie, as I call him. Yeah. We haven't seen a lot of him. So maybe he gets some time.
I might edit this out so that I can take that one, because that's who I was gonna.
Oh, is that you?
I was going to say, yeah.
Apologies.
I think this has got to be his time to shine. He's going to be wanting for opportunities to break in here.
100%.
Given how well the midfield is playing.
Yeah.
But it's, especially if the Roots do play a lot of games in this cup, like, there's going to be playing time. And
can he play right back?
Oh, man.
Just saying. Maybe he can against Monterey.
You guys have listed literally almost everyone on this team at this point. I think
it's
that
called thorough analysis.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I think that it's, I can say this now. I feel like by a week from now, this will already be dated. I would like to see, I like an opportunity to see Jackson or Keel in a feature role. Because I think both of those guys have really shown some exciting stuff. You know, I kind of think we may see a lot of Jackson in the next two games. And so that's why I'm like loath to pick that for my, because that's going to feel like a silly prediction by the time we get to the Monterey Bay game. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Keel starts in the number nine. And, you know, you'd love to have the Roots having somebody else up there banging him in. So those, you know, I'm also going to pick two, but I did it in a way that's morally superior to how you guys did it.
Jackson Keel's a good shout. That's a good shout.
Yeah.
All right. So Big week of Oakland Roots soccer coming up. Saturday is, of course, Rooted in Rising Women's Empowerment Night at the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum. That's kind of appropriate. Union Berlin, I think it's Union Berlin, just appointed the first female manager of a team in the top flight of one of the top five leagues, which is pretty cool. I think it's on an interim basis for now, but it's still quite the milestone. That's a big moment in international soccer. Next Wednesday is SF Climate Week. I don't know what you do. What's the halftime show for Climate Week? Is it like a dancing sun or something? I don't know. Hopefully a lot of good, entertaining association football played at the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum this coming week. And we'll have plenty of stuff to talk about when we return following these three matches. We hope to see you out there at one of these matches. And, of course, until then, up the Roots.